Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hey, Jay.
How's it going, B?
All right. I think this is actually working and we're actually recording.
Well, and not only that, but it seems like we're actually talking.
Well, one of us at a time, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We could try talking over each other.
Yeah. No,
I don't think that would be a very good idea, though.
Talking to each other. It's a novel concept.
Something kind of funky
down here that I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Can you smell that?
So what are you drinking?
I am having a fine homemade seltzer.
Homemade seltzer?
Yeah. We have this little machine that pumps seltzer into water.
Uh-huh.
It pumps carbon dioxide, into the water, carbonate.
Oh, yeah.
And so we make our own seltzer. Only I had not properly chilled this water down. My rotation must have been off because the bottle I got out of the refrigerator was not cold, which makes for the best seltzer, cold water.
Ah, yes.
And so it's a little disappointing, I'm afraid. But gotta love the seltzer. Of course, I'm still doing the planned abstinence, if you will.
Oh, yes.
1 week left.
Yeah.
1 week left, and then I'm going to be in the gutter.
How has this gone for you?
It's been fantastic.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it really makes me wonder why I even bother drinking.
Well, yeah. Well, except for the fun parts.
Yeah, I guess that's much
good feeling.
And of course, it is goes without saying that it's easier for me to do this 36 and a half day period because it's not forever.
Right,
I'm able
exactly.
To tell myself, hey, yeah, I cannot drink because I'm not giving up drinking. I'm just giving up drinking for a little while.
Yeah. I mean,
really,
I could imagine that it would be fun to, go to hell for, a month just to sort of see what it's like and look around and, kind of meet all the evil people that I've only heard about,
so
in history books and whatnot.
Yes. So
but I wouldn't want to stay there.
You are equating the abstinence from alcohol with hell?
Well, no. I'm just trying to make a comparative leap, as it were.
Well, what are you drinking, Jay?
Bourbon.
Oh, that's a good drink.
Yeah, with some Diet Coke in it. I'm in such a rut here that I can barely see up over the edge at this point.
I did not have some bourbon myself, but we had some house guests here a few days ago from Finland, of all places.
Yeah.
And they before they went to bed, they were in our guest room here, which has an extensive bar. And I said, you could have some liquor. And he said, well, what do you have? And I started showing him, all these different liquors that I had. And he was quite, impressed with some of them. But he was really looking for something local. And by local, he just meant American.
Of course,
when I say local, I mean, from the New Orleans area, but he just meant, some freaking American. And it turns out, everything I have here is it's all imported liquor, except for, of course, a bottle, a big jug, actually, of good old Wild Turkey.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So he had some
Do
bourbon.
People drink bourbon there in Finland?
I think it's a little bit of a I'm sure they do. But I do think it probably is a little bit of a little bit exotic.
Yeah.
Like a French cognac might be here or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I know bourbon is consumed worldwide, but I'm sure the drink of Finland is schnapps or aquavit or something like that.
Yeah. When we were in China last year, I took a bottle of bourbon with me, mostly because I figured, I didn't know if we would be near any stores or anything like that, so I figured it'd be good to have that with me, And it's kind of a good thing that I did because, there was alcohol that I could purchase right across the street from the hotel where I was staying, bottles of alcohol, but I could not find bourbon until right toward the end of the trip. I ran into it at a liquor store, and it was very, very expensive. Probably twice what I would pay in even American dollars here in the States. But what was astoundingly cheap, it was about maybe a third of the price that we pay for it here in the States, was Russian vodka. It was it was pretty much the cheapest liquor that you could get, at least that I where I could read or at least recognize the label. And I'm trying to think. Well, Stoli was the really, really cheap liquor or vodka that you could get. It's much cheaper than Absolut or some of the other brands that we sort of equate with Stoli on a on a level of at least what it costs here in the States.
Although I'm not ever one inclined to spend a lot of money on vodka.
Yeah, me either. Yeah.
Well, it's like we're brothers in arms.
Exactly.
You know, I should mention, I may have to go at short notice if the girl starts crying. I'm on bottle duty. So,
oh, gotcha.
You know, if
where's
X Y? She's here, but she's somewhat exhausted, and she just did a marathon breastfeeding session. So, yes. So if the girl needs refreshment, it will be on me.
Yeah. Well, these things happen.
We would just have to terminate the phone call.
Yeah.
That could happen.
So are you all doing like a combination of breastfeeding, bottle feeding?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Right on.
Girl's 13 months old. She's walking now, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that on your blog.
Yeah, and I was fascinated to see that it wasn't really a just a discrete moment of boom, suddenly walking.
Mm-hmm.
And I observed that and observed that it was a gradual tentative process. And yet I've heard from so many parents that, you know, just boom, it just happened. And
yeah.
That was interesting. And then I heard Christy say the other day, yeah, just one day she just started walking about our own daughter. Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, hold on there, Christy. Remember we were just discussing the other day how it wasn't like that at all. And it's just one of those funny things that in retrospect, even just a week later, the mind starts to play with things. And, you know, that's why I find journaling and blogging is a form of journaling, of course, so fascinating, because you capture the, you know, your thoughts somewhat close to their
to when they
actually
happen.
Happening. And then you find later that, wow, I didn't realize I thought that or believed that or so. And so anyway, this has made me wonder if all these tales that I've heard from other parents maybe are just a little bit, skewed, if you will.
Well, yeah, I think that they might be. Certainly, you know, I found myself thinking today that it was just all of a sudden that Julian started speaking in sentences. But then I started really trying to think back on that. And there was one point I remember a couple of weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago, when I said to Daylin, and I wish I could remember what the words were, but there were four words that he strung together. They were all nouns, I believe. But you know, he basically said a sentence.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to say that he's speaking in the King's English. They're more often, you know, we're in that really kind of hilarious stage, at least hilarious to a parent, when, you know, he's saying things that you know, especially if they're a little cryptic, it's fun to figure out what the hell he just said.
Sure.
Apparently, Daylin was showing him a book, and it had a picture of a doctor in it, and he kind of asked her what it was, and she said it was a doctor. and he blurted out, "No monkey jump in bed," which, you know, to a lot of people who, particularly people who don't have kids, they have no idea what that means or how that would relate to a doctor.
Yeah, but you do.
Do you know what I'm referring to, though?
No clue.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a song that's got this line in it that someone asked the doctor, and the doctor said, "No more monkeys jumping on the bed."
Ah,
yeah. So he got, and so ever since then, I've been quizzing him on what the doctor said, and sure enough, no monkey jump in bed is what the doctor said.
I'll be damned. Well, you know, I'm really looking forward to that stage of development because I'm like you. I'm a very verbal person.
Yeah.
I like you know, verbal communication and so forth. That's really I'm looking forward to it. Even the kind of pre-verbal stuff where you know, Persephone is, you know, the babbling and so forth. I just find endlessly fascinating to listen
yeah.
to.
Well, actually, while we're on this topic, I haven't even, Day, I hear her rustling around upstairs. She just got home from going
yeah.
to see that romantic comedy, whatever it's called. I Love You, Man, or whatever it is. But so I haven't had a chance to tell her this, so you are the first to know that, at least unless I've missed something that's happened in her presence and not mine, I think Jules said his first four-letter word tonight.
Well, he is taking
at,
out the years on, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He's not even two yet. He has this little foam football that he's very much into balls and footballs in particular, and this football in particular. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready to put him to bed, and I realized he didn't have the football. And, you know, if I were to put him into the, you know, if I were to read the books and go through the whole routine and then get him into the bed and he noticed that there was no football, you know, it
yes.
can quickly escalate to where you almost have to start over.
Yeah.
So we were looking around for the football, and I was actually, we had taken a bath before that, so I was actually naked, so I didn't want to turn on the lights on the main floor because we don't have curtains, and it was dark outside, so I would be flashing the neighbors. So I'm kind of fumbling around in the dark looking for this football, and I said, "Where is that damn ball?" You know, just sort of to myself. I wasn't talking to him, but he was standing on the stairs, and he just started saying, "Damn ball, damn ball." So I quickly corrected him and said that I meant foam ball.
Oh,
and he said foam ball.
Yeah.
So,
well, those are the little moments, I suppose, that you'll cherish forever.
Yeah, exactly. And see, I would probably forget exactly which day it was or even, you know, what exactly it was that happened if we hadn't have had this conversation.
Yeah, thank God.
And recorded it for posterity.
Well, I'm all about recording things for posterity.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you have been posting snippets from your journals up on your blog and on Flickr.
Well, yes. On my blog, even though I've been blogging for a while, and I've gone under the delusion, if you will, that the blog is just an online journal. I mean, you know, which it is in a sense, but I noticed that I've noticed for a long time that I don't really write in on the blog the same way that I would write in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying that. So some of those things that you may have seen is I've just been trying to write like a journal entry. It's just I was sitting down to write in my private journal at the end of the day what happened today.
Yeah.
You know, and so forth. And one of the reasons that that's kind of been at the front of my mind is because my work on continuing to recover my old journals, which got flooded after Katrina, has been continuing, and I just finished another volume. You know, it's this process whereby I rip all the pages out, scan them, because even though they sat underwater for a couple of weeks, after they dried out, they're actually fairly legible.
Sometimes it looks like it.
On some pages more than others. But they're nasty and moldy and kind of gross to handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so by scanning them this way, I'm able to make a PDF, and then I can have it printed with like Lulu.com. You know, one of these on-demand publishing services. And as a full-color printout, it's actually an interesting object, kind of an artsy look to it that I kind of dig. But moreover, it preserves for me the stuff. So I've kind of been descending into my past. I've been especially thinking a lot about, like, the 1985, for example, which is a lot of this journalist in 1985 is what I was working on. And I was also looking at this letter that I wrote in one particular week in 1985, probably the longest letter I ever wrote, 26 pages, very closely written, just describing everything that happened in that one week of my life in just this extremely vivid detail. And I, strangely enough, thinking about all that, that week I was, I took a trip to Moscow and Helsinki and Tampere, Finland. And I stayed with the Telemaki family. Their daughter stayed with us in the United States for a year, so they're kind of like, you know, kind of like pseudo-relatives. And anyway, the mom and dad, Erki and Raili, just came over and visited here in New Orleans. It was so bizarre.
And they're the ones who were drinking out of your bar.
That's the guy who was having the bourbon. I just felt it was so strange because I even tried to I was thinking about them a lot. I looked them up. I tried to look them up on Facebook, see if Paivi or Maria might be on Facebook, and I couldn't. I was spelling their name wrong, so I wasn't finding them. And then just a couple days later, Maria contacted me on Facebook.
Wow.
And said, "Hey, my parents are coming over, you know." And then, like a week later, here they are, and it was just really great to see them. It was just very nice, but kind of spooky.
Yeah, spooky, I would say, but also awesome.
Yeah, spooky in an awesome way.
Yeah, the world is weird. Did you? I was a little bit confused by the whole Finland versus Sweden thing because I thought that you had stayed in Sweden.
Right. I lived in Sweden for a year, and of course Finland is the country right next door to Sweden. You know, it's between Sweden and Russia, or the Soviet Union at the time. So Finland was one of these countries that had a very precarious kind of relationship, to say the least, between the kind of West and the East, if you will. And when they took me on that trip to Moscow, that was back in 1985, when relations between the United States and the USSR were not that great. And the fact that I was coming in with a Finnish family from Helsinki made it very much easier to go in there and visit. And it was really a great experience. Of course, now it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah, and Erki was telling me some about what Russia's like now, but that's neither here nor there.
Does he like it?
Russia?
Yeah.
I didn't really ask him.
No.
They've traveled a lot, and one thing that I thought was interesting was that as we described, you know, different problems here in New Orleans and so forth, one thing he kept coming back to is that, you know, it's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
That the same problems, these same issues come up all over, and they come up in different forms and to different degrees and so forth, but they do exist everywhere. You know, the, like the tension
social conventions sometimes make them appear different, but...
Right. But I thought that was a fairly wise, you know, observation. I mean, it didn't a statement like that can sound kind of off-putting, but it wasn't. I mean, the way he expressed it, I really believed that he was observing something for real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Finland has transformed itself over the years, really over our lifetimes, into sort of the epicenter of classical music in the world.
Really? Now,
through
that
a very,
is not what I did you to say.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't say most of the important classical musicians in the world come from there, but it's astounding how many do. And that goes for composers and soloists who tour the world now, and conductors and very fine orchestras. And I looked into this. I'm talking totally off the cuff and out of my completely Swiss cheese memory here. But as I recall, they have something like 30 professional, full-time professional orchestras in the country, which has an overall population of somewhat more than double Montana.
Yeah.
And, you know, here in Montana, for the record, we have zero full-time professional orchestras.
Wow.
You know, so, and it, I mean, you know, most states in the union, well, no, I shouldn't say most states, many states in the union with far greater populations than Montana even don't have orchestras where that's all that people do.
Right, right. Well, that is something. I did not know that. I thought you were going to make reference to, you know, like Nokia, the phone company or something like that. But,
well, yeah, there is Nokia, too.
Linux and open source computing and stuff like that. But speaking of music, this might be a good chance to time to check out this audio clip, which or it's actually about 8 minutes long, I think, that I sent to you ahead of time. So should we do that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so here it is. Thank you.
I did, anybody else learned, but best thing, just keep it to yourself, you know, and you can have more fun. First thing you got to do, you got to learn their name. For if you don't know their name, you can't holler at their name. You can't holler it out. They don't know who you're hollering at. And first thing you got to do in your first lesson here is you got to get down real low, grunt. Can you grunt? If you can grunt, go with me. Let's go together. On three, grunt. One, two, three. See? One, two, three. See? Can't do it that time, let's try it again. On the count of three, let's grunt together again. One, two, three. See how it is? One, two, three. See? Can you grunt like it? If you can grunt like it, why? Then it won't be long till you can be it on your voice. All you have to do is just keep practicing over and over. Just listen tape a few times and you'll get right on to it. So we'll go together with a word now. Are you ready for a word? Just say Bill. You can say Bill real loud, just in your natural voice. Let's say Bill together. Bill. Bill. See how easy it is? Now let's grunt once and say Bill.
Hey, Bill.
See, now let's see you track now. Let's try it together.
Hey, Bill.
So let's go with Bill again. Bill. See, anybody can say Bill if they can talk tall. So let's grunt again. Real easy to grunt. Then keep going real low. See? Real good, then you can keep right on. One, two, three. See? Can you grunt?
All right. So, had you ever you never heard that before, right?
No.
I mean,
no.
Before I sent
not
it to
before you.
You
sent it to me. Right.
So that is a mashup, if you will, that I created.
Well, wait! I don't want to know yet.
Well, you don't want to know. Okay, I'm sorry.
No. No, because you made a point of telling me that I shouldn't endeavor to figure out what it was.
Right.
And you,
right. So I was going to tell you so
the
name. Have a conversation about it in real time. But well, I guess I should ask impressions.
Well, I listened to it a couple of times because I have that ability that people who are listening to this might not have yet. And at first, I just thought this is very, very strange and kind of unsettling. And then, you know, it started to sort of make a little bit of structural sense to me. And I wouldn't say that it's complexly structured, but I would say that it's satisfyingly structured. In the sense of, you know, it appears to me, you said that it was a mashup, and I kind of figured that part out. It seems like it's somebody doing Tuvan-style throat singing,
mm-hmm.
possibly in front of an. I think that I'm guessing that the live audience that you hear clapping at the beginning is related to that, and not to this kind of cheesy orchestral version of House of the Rising Sun. But I could be wrong on that. Maybe that's thrown in there completely separately. But, you know, the thing that I found interesting about it is that there's two pieces of music, you know, in the first instance, the cheesy orchestral House of the Rising Sun, and in the second instance, the that electronic music, which was very sort of soothing and predictable, and even though I hadn't heard that particular music before, I felt like I had, butted up against two recordings of people making weird noises with their voices. So in that sense, I found the structure of it satisfying, even though I don't think I want to know who the Hey Bill guy is. I don't want to meet him.
That is, I can't. You will remain ignorant because I don't know who he is. I constructed this recording, mashup, whatever, from four different sources.
Mm-hmm.
So one was.
Oh, you made it.
Yeah, and I made it my own little self.
There you go. Yeah.
The House
of Rising
Sun.
Wondering what kind of freak would do that.
It's by 101 Strings Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tuvan throat singing in front of a live audience, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but he's like probably the most famous Tuvan throat singing person. And he it was from an album by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones.
Yeah.
So, anyway, live performance. And then I believe it's Spaceship by Hummel or some kind of pretty generic electronic new wave, new agey
mm-hmm.
kind of piece. And then finally, that audio recording of how to throw, you know, instructional recording on how to throw your voice.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if any, it's one of those recordings that's been circulating for quite some time. You do that pretty well.
It actually works. See, that was the thing, was that, like, I was like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? And then I tried it,
spooky.
Of course. And it's really trippy. I doubt that it would fool other people. But I can almost fool myself into thinking that it sounds like somebody else talking when I do it.
Well, anyway, that's a little weird recording that's been circulating amongst, I think, audio geeks for a while, and I found it on the net.
Mm-hmm.
and it's unattributed. And so basically there's four sources. Now, all of them are just played in
there.
So
the people cheering are cheering for the throat singer.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. And they're all
which I think is you kind of if I may interject, I think that you gave away why there's such a rabidly excited audience about, you know, because tube and throat singing is not it's a type of chanting, so one wouldn't expect a lot of cheering. But you know, if it happened at a Bela Fleck concert, I can imagine that the audience was just like, yeah, somebody's doing something other than Bela Fleck playing his banjo.
that's very sweet of you. But they're all presented. All the tracks are presented just in their entirety as is, except for the Throw Your Voice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that one I diced up considerably and kind of rearranged. But which is evident by the time you get to the end, I think. But the reason that I bring all this up is because I believe this is all highly illegal.
Oh, the theft of other people's recordings and the remixing thereof?
Yeah, well, I mean, theft, I don't know about theft. Is it theft? But yes, using their work with
mm-hmm.
without their permission to create a derivative work. And, you know, I think that it's pretty clear when you listen to that this is something with distinct constituent elements, but which has becomes a new work unto itself because of the juxtaposition and so forth.
Right.
Now you can argue
yeah.
about whether or not, you know, how good is it, or is it a valid art form or whatever. But what is not apparently arguable is the legal status of it. I think the legal status is actually very clear. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act forbids you to make derivative works without permission of other people's digital stuff.
I don't think that's entirely correct. I could be wrong, but we may have to do a little bit of further research here.
If it's under copyright.
I think you're still stating it wrong, though, because the making of that mashup I don't think is illegal. It's the selling of that mashup.
No,
illegal.
Because if that was the case, then giving it away for free would not be illegal. And I believe it is. I remember researching
this. The distribution, okay. So any kind of real distribution of somebody's stuff but I think that you're perfectly fine sitting in your bedroom making that.
Yes. Well, so the question is, where does it become illegal? Does it when it leaves your bedroom?
Yeah. And
there you get at the nut of it, which is, what the hell do you do with this kind of thing?
Yeah.
There's a
guy named who goes by the name of Girl Talk, named Greg Gillis, I think is his last name. I ought to remember that because I only talked to him about a month ago. Who does this stuff quite extensively. I mean, it's sort of his shtick. There's a lot of people, of course, doing this kind of stuff, but he's sort of the hot dude du jour. And I interviewed him and talked to him a little bit about the fair use stuff and also about a whole lot of other stuff. So there's a, I don't know, that interview is on my blog. And I also, sort of to treat him just for fun, first of all, but also to perhaps see if how he would feel getting a little bit of his own medicine, I took the interview that I had with him and took phrases and words from that interview and remix them, if you will, as answers to questions from a Rolling Stone interview of Bruce Springsteen. So, you know, the questions are from that interview, but then his answers, I used his words from our interview to answer those questions.
Yeah.
So those two things are both on my blog, just to blatantly self-promote.
Is he going to hunt you down and kill you now, or?
I don't know. You know, he didn't comment or you know, there was no indication that he maybe even ever saw it. I was quite proud of myself for my own cleverness and enjoyed what I achieved in total silence, because I don't think anybody ever even commented on that post on my blog. So there you go. But
yeah,
it was
we'll have to correct that. So what does he do with his work?
Well, he has a record label. Well, first of all, he gives it away for any price that anybody's willing to pay. So, you know, sort of borrowing the Radiohead model that they employed with their In Rainbows album. The only real difference is that if you download it for free, he sort of forces you to take a quiz, which was actually very interesting in and of itself, as to why you're not paying for it. In just a little single question, multiple answer, or multiple choice thing. You know, then you can get the album for free or whatever. But, you know, he makes his living, it appears anyway, and from what he said to me, I think, or at least what I read. It's always confusing to keep track of what people tell me and what I just read about them. But, you know, he makes his living by touring around. And basically, you know, I mean, what he does, ironically, what he does live in concert is not illegal at all, because it's, you know, he's basically being a concert DJ. He's just not playing full tracks and not playing them alone. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he's playing Goodnight Irene and Hey Ya and these tunes that everybody knows, just like any DJ would to try to pump up the crowd, except, you know, they're all mashed up together.
Huh.
And he does it very well, and he has a very lively stage presence, which, you know, usually seems to incorporate taking off his clothes and crowd surfing and all of that. So,
sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so I guess the puzzle then that it comes to me is you know, I assume you said that you found some pleasure, at least in listening to this. It seems like it has some value. I certainly don't want to make money off of it. I don't envision this as some kind of new career, but at the same, it's more like a hobby, you know, just a little fun thing to do occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there is that unless you're, you know, going to take it seriously and, you know, go after getting the permission. The permissions from all the artists and so forth and the record companies, which, as you can imagine, can be quite a convoluted and a high bar to jump over.
Impossible.
Yeah, pretty much impossible. Presumably I can't legally share these with anybody.
Yeah. Well, technically, I think you're correct.
But this guy you're talking about, the
bar that seems to be say that again.
This girl talk guy, you're saying he shares these recordings that he's made, and he not only these mashups, and not only that, he actually sells them. So how does
for a secret record label?
Has he gotten cease and desist letters from the RIAA or anybody?
I don't believe he has, and.
I guess it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. I mean, he's sort of, you know, the brilliance of what he's doing is that he doesn't really have any great mechanism through which the RIAA can track what he's selling, and you know, he's not going through the normal channels. You're not going to find his records at record stores. Well, you might. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. Maybe he's selling there. I don't know. I mean, ironically, given this conversation, I sort of talked around or sort of skimmed over the fair use issue because every interview that I'd ever read with him was only about the fair use issues. Yeah. So I figured, you know, if people are interested in that, they can read about that in the New York Times, which has profiled him, or, you know, any number of other places. So I wanted to talk to him about other things.
Makes sense.
So,
well,
I think that the short of it, though, to get to the nut of your question, I don't think that you're in major danger of getting sued by the RIAA or ASCAP or BMI if you're giving this away for free, so long as, you know, especially if you're trying your best to at least offer citations of source material and that kind of stuff.
Well, actually,
you know, they've got bigger fish to fry.
I did publish these on my blog a while back, probably a year ago. And I specifically did not put citations, at least in the blog, because I didn't want, you know, it to be evident who I was
using
source material from without permission. I just put them up there and kind of said, hey, these are some mashups. Listen to them. But I certainly didn't want the artist or some representative of the artist to, you know, Google the phrase or something and
the
name of the
band.
Good
point.
Kind of. So there you have it. It's I'm not losing sleep over oh my God, the RIAA, they're coming after me. That's not what I'm thinking at all. I think it's ironic. It's a shame. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that, you know, I can't share this. But I guess it's protecting the rights of the artists who originally came up with the stuff or something.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that if we were to get into the ethical discussion of this, we would be on the phone for another hour, and I suspect that we've probably been approaching that in this conversation at this point. So maybe that should be
a good point.
An actual planned topic for our next installment.
Oh, perhaps it should be. Well, let us contemplate that. In the meantime, I suppose we should wind it down and say goodnight.
Yeah. Well, it's been good catching up, and hopefully we will get back on track with doing this more regularly.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I think maybe an every other week pace might be more realistic, but, you know, that's all negotiable.
Yeah.
I do want to note that 1 week from today, I'll be back, what is the phrase, off the wagon?
Oh, yeah.
On the wagon, whatever.
Drinking. Yeah, so we should get you drunk that night. So.
I would not mind having an inaugural conversation in a week.
Mm-hmm. Right on.
Because then I will be ready to put the cap back in nightcap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'll put the night in good night at this point, and we will aim for that date.
All right. Well, talk to you later.
Later on.
Bye-bye.
Bye.